Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms. Now, Savage has recently introduced the 110 Ultralight. Savage has teamed up with Proof Research once again to craft a barrel specific for a purpose-driven firearm. At around 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory-blueprinted Savage 110 action. The carbon fiber wrapped stainless steel barrel and melanite skeletonized receiver minimize weight for success on any mountain hunt. Now, I could go on and on about all the good things about this firearm, but what you need to do is go to savagearms.com, check out the 110 Ultralight. They have it available for the 308 Win Mag, the 270 Win Mag, the 28 Nosler, the 28 Ackley Improved, the 30-06 Springfield, and so on and so on and so on. They got it for just about any cartridge. So what you need to do is go to savagearms.com. Check this rifle out. It's a badass rifle. Savagearms.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we are talking bow accessories, specifically from HHA, and today's guest is Scott Bakken. Scott is kind of a jack-of-all-trades. He wears several hats within HHA, and on this episode, we talk about their rests, We talk about their sites. We talk about a little company history. We talk about the design process. We talk about the timeline from when the company started and all of the SKUs that they have and a little bit of everything and why the, you know, we also talk about trends, right? We see in today's world that some of the older trends are coming back, and one that I share with him is the saddle. I can remember the saddle being popular before social media, and then it kind of went away, and tree stands became popular again, and now we're seeing this resurgence of saddle hunting. And so I asked him questions like, you know, are single pin sites a trend, or are multiple pin sites a trend, and has HHA seen that throughout the years, ups and downs of you know, what the customers are actually wanting. And we talk a little bit about everything. So HHA is the topic of discussion today. Hopefully you guys enjoy. If you guys have a specific company that you want featured or a specific topic that you want featured on the Hunting Gear Podcast, hit me up on Instagram. Nine Finger Chronicles is my Instagram sign. Follow me, and that's where all of this stuff gets posted. So be sure to subscribe to the Hunting Gear Podcast or the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. You're going to find all that content there. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Nine Finger Chronicles for me, and that's on Facebook and Instagram, and the Sportsman's Nation Facebook and Instagram as well. Be sure to check out the product lines from HHA. And other than that, intro's short. Let's get into today's Hunting Gear Podcast with HHA Sports and Scott Bakken. All right, on the phone with me from HHA, Mr. Scott Bakken. Scott, how you doing, man?
Good, good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Through just knowing you and knowing, you know, some, we have a couple friends who are the same, and it sounds like you've already been on a hunt this year.
Yeah, I actually just got back a couple weeks ago, kicked off the season out in Wyoming, hunting antelope, with a buddy of ours that, he's an outfitter out there. So it's kind of an annual trip just to go out and visit, you know, especially with everything going on this year. Like, Wyoming's probably the safest place you could be. So we're like, why not?
Right.
Yeah, it was but you know, it's just one of those trips where it's just good dudes, and just, you know, it's like perfect timing to just get away and, you know, kind of disconnect for a while. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool. So did you have any luck while you're out there?
We did. We actually had a great trip. You know, so I say it's a buddy of ours, but you find out like how good a buddies you are with someone when you bug a hunt with them, but then they fail to mention to you that like the antelope population is like the lowest it's been in like 40 years. It was tough hunting, but we were all successful and tagged out, and you know, it was just a lot of fun. But you know, from, you know, the previous years to this year, you could definitely tell a difference. I mean, there just was not the antelope numbers that we're used to seeing, but like I said, it was a lot of fun. So
yeah, well, I'll tell you what, every time I hear someone talk about antelope hunting, I never hear them say like, oh, we never got an opportunity. Someone always finds a way to get an opportunity, especially some of the guys that I know where they're going blind. They don't know really what they're doing. They basically pick a dot on a map and say, well, we're going to go here. I mean, if you've ever been west, especially in Wyoming, they're number one, they're all over the place. So yeah, it's, even with a lower, you know, a lower population, it sounds like everybody is still getting opportunities out there.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, and that's like, yeah, we were not struggling by any means. I mean, I think, you know, so, you know, I was Justin Czar and I were together who, you know, we both know. And I mean, I think within the first like 2 hours of our first morning, we both had, I think we had two stocks apiece that we failed. So there was definitely opportunities. And the thing with like the, you know, the population is that it was sporadic too. It kind of depended on where you were, what unit you were in. So you know, three other the guys that were with us. I think the one guy, I think like one morning he had like $50 in front of him or something. So it was very sporadic, but yeah, you're right. It is a very opportunistic style of hunting.
Yeah. Cool, man.
Which is perfect for starting the year.
Yeah, like absolutely.
Dusting the cobwebs off and stuff. So
yeah, if you want to get on the board early, antelope hunting might be the perfect opportunity for you.
Well, and I think it, because we went the second week of opener. So, and it literally opens like, I think like the first or second weekend in August in Wyoming.
Yeah.
So, it is early. So yeah, it's a great icebreaker to the year.
Yeah.
It's pretty economical too.
Yeah. That's a fact.
Like, it's not like you're not breaking the bank to go do it.
Yeah. What else you got planned this year?
You know, honestly, not much. That was kind of the big trip. I bought an over the counter, non-resident, elk tag for Idaho, just because last year was the first year that they sold out of them. So there was a chance that I may be able to go. So I did buy a tag, and, it kind of just threw together a really quick trip out there. So I do have that at the end of September, but that's just, it's literally like a 3.5 day hunt the last 3 days of the season.
Okay.
But you know, 3 days is better than no days.
That's a fact, man. So, that's a fact.
And that's just, you know, how do you pass up a couple days out in the mountains at the end of September? But, other than that, those are really the two only trips. And then just, you know, standard whitetail hunting around here. So I say that's a pretty low key season, even though for most people that's probably a lot, but, it's just been kind of a weird year, you know, as far as planning hunts and stuff. So it's kind of the first time I can remember where I didn't really feel like doing anything. I kind of just, I don't know. I don't know if it's just with everything that's been going on. I just, ambition to travel all over the country has kind of been minimal, but, you know, it's, Now that we got that Wyoming hunt out of the way, it's kind of, you know, I'm starting to come around. So
yeah.
Who knows what will pop up between now and, you know, the end of the year. So,
yeah. So where is HHA located?
We are in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, which is basically dead center in the state of Wisconsin. So we're 2 hours from each, you know, eastern and western border. We're 4 hours from the north border, 4 hours from the south border. We're literally like dead center in the state. So if anybody's familiar with Wisconsin Dells or Green Bay or anything like that, we're kind of right in centrally located in between all those.
Okay. All right. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about what your specific role is within HHA and kind of what tasks you do on a weekly, monthly, annual basis?
Sure. So I guess my official title at HHA is Director of Sales and Marketing. So my primary responsibilities are anything that's sales or marketing related. The majority of my day is spent, we do have an on the road sales team, which consists of about 20 sales reps. So the majority of my time is spent working with them, managing them, and just, you know, kind of helping them, you know, with anything they need or assisting, you know, with any sales related stuff that they have. And then, you know, the marketing side, you know, that's kind of seasonal. So a lot of that's working with like our social media manager, you know, working with publications, getting them ads or, you know, any opportunities like that, working with any sort of sponsorship opportunities, donations, whatever. And then outside of that, it's kind of, you know, being a smaller company, we don't have the luxury of hiring, you know, a bunch of people for like specific roles. We all kind of wear multiple hats. So although the majority of my time is spent with sales and marketing, a lot of it is, you know, customer service calls, tech calls, warranty calls. You know, if you have a question on site in a site, chances are you're probably going to talk to me or one other guy. So it's kind of, you know, we all wear, you know, multiple hats outside of our primary roles. And then obviously, you know, trade shows are a big part of that too. So,
yeah. And it sounds like that's a theme throughout a lot of the companies within the hunting industry. It's, you know, unless it's owned by one of those giant conglomerate type of companies, then the, like someone like yourself is doing a lot of different things throughout the day, which is kind of cool because you really get to know the product line that way.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And even like, I mean, the big private equity companies, I mean, you know, they'll have one guy like myself, you know, although his job scope may be more specific, but now he's doing it for 20 brands,
right?
You know, so it's really, it's kind of the same thing, just a grand scale, but it's cool in the sense that, like you said, you get to know the company, you know, very, you know, intimately, you know, the products, and I think that kind of relates when people do contact you with questions, the fact that like they're literally talking to, you know, this guy, and then, you know, maybe down the road they might run into them at a trade show and be like, oh, you know, I talked to you on the phone, be like, yep, that's me. So I think like you kind of get more of a personal relationship when it's kind of an environment like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily the most efficient, but, you know, at the same time, it's the way we've done it, and it's worked for us. So it can get pretty crazy sometimes, but in the end it works out well. So, and it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see here. How old is HHA?
So the company officially, was founded back in 1984. I guess what would that be, 36 years?
Yeah, 30-something years.
Yeah, so that's when we were HHA as a company officially started. We didn't really, I guess, we weren't really recognized until the mid-90s when we first introduced the Optimizer line of sights. Prior to that, the first 10 years were spent kind of, you know, basically, I mean, we've made just about everything over, you know, that 36 years from, I mean, we had, some really, I guess for the time, like, very detailed target faces, you know, for shooting at. We had, broadheads, we had releases, we had stabilizers, we had, we've literally have tried it all. But it wasn't until like the mid 90s that we really kind of found an idea that, took off, and that's, you know, that's what's got us to this point today.
And that's the Optimizer line of sights.
Yep. Okay. Yep. The Optimizer line of sights.
And that was the first line of sights that, HHA kind of introduced.
It was the first ones that actually stuck. I think prior to that, we had tried a couple different versions of sights that were more, they're kind of more, you know, in line with what was available at the time, which, you know, back then, you know, when I say back then, I mean, I was still in diapers and, you know, probably sticking my finger in socket outlets or something. But, it wasn't that when we first introduced the Optimizer line, it was a concept that was just starting to become a thing. And what was available out there was subpar. There was room for something better. So our founder, Harry, decided, you know what, like he had spent their life savings on all these other ideas that didn't take off. So it's kind of like, all right, this either has to work or, you know, HHA wasn't going to be a thing. And, it just so happened that, you know, his idea, it was better than what was available at the time. And it, you know, it took off. So yeah, 1994, 1995 that was when the Optimizer line of sights, which at that point it was just one sight. That's when HHA kind of really was, you know, began, even though we had been in business 10 years prior to that.
Okay. So talk to me a little bit about what is it about the Optimizer line that made it stick and made it so popular?
The big thing was, the kind of like the original product that everybody was using, it was all plastic. So it was all, injected molded. It was very, I don't want to say cheap, but like not, it just was not up to the durability that, you know, bow hunters, you know, are used to. But it was the only thing that was out there at the time that was kind of, you know, that could be used by like all, you know, and anybody could shoot it, whether you were, you know, a target shooter, a hunter, whatever. And it wasn't like a target specific, you know, single pin, you know, like a Sherlock or something like that, who they've been around for a long time too. But it was like the first kind of like hunting style single pin. Harry was very involved with our local archery club, which to this day, HHA is still very involved with the club. And he was seeing all these guys shooting sights, and he's like, man, you know, those are really nice sights, but God, they're, you know, they're made out of plastic. Like, you know, that's how, you know, that's not, you know, that's not acceptable. So, him and one of his friends came up with the idea of basically taking that idea, but making it out of machined aluminum. And, you know, like I said, it was kind of like Harry's last, you know, this idea's got to work. And, they brought it to a local machine shop and kind of made the first prototype, and everybody loved it. And then next thing you know, he was, you know, grinding out parts in his basement. And, you know, one of the most iconic photos we have is this picture of Harry grinding on a grinding wheel. And he is just covered in, you know, in black, you know, which honestly, if somebody probably saw it today, we'd get burned at the stake for being black-faced. But, I mean, he is just covered in, in dust from grinding on this machined aluminum and stuff. But that's how he did it, until eventually we were able to open up our own machine shop and, you know, buy our first CNC machines. And that's when more of the family started getting involved. So, like I said, it was like that early mid 90s was when things kind of really took off. And then they really haven't slowed down since.
Yeah. So that was kind of the foot in the door for the company that helped it eventually kind of built the foundation for HHA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And even that site, so that's, we call that our Optimizer Light, which is it's a very basic slider style, site. So, you know, you move the adjustable arms, it's a 1-to-1 ratio. And I mean, to this day, that's still one of our number one selling sites. But, you know, obviously it's evolved over the years, and, you know, the design has changed and stuff like that, but it's still, I mean, all purposes, it's basically the exact same as it was as far as functionality. It just, you know, has a little bit different look nowadays, but everything kind of was built off of the Optimizer. And then I'm trying to think, so that would have been probably 10 to 12 years later, we introduced the newest addition to the Optimizer line, which was the Optimizer Ultra, which was our first wheel design. So rather than using an adjustable arm, you actually had a dial that you would rotate, you know, to compensate for the yardage. And then from there, back in, that would have been like 2010, I believe, is when, let's see here, 2012 maybe. No, I actually take that back. It would have been 2014 is when we introduced the Optimizer Kingpin, which was an expansion off of the Ultra, and that was our first wheel forward design, where the yardage wheel, we moved the disc closer to the front of the sight for easier quiver mounting and stuff like that. So, you know, the Optimizer line has evolved, but, you know, there's quite a bit of gap between each evolution. So it just kind of goes to show how long each site kind of carried us before it was time to introduce something new.
Yeah. And that's in a way, that's a good thing, right? If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Type of thing, which for me, you know, I look at this and I'm on the website now. I'm looking at all the different varieties of the Optimizer, and for the most part, they look the same. And I do have a Kingpin on my site right now, or on my bow right now. And that's the one I'm going to end up using this year. But, you know, did all of the sights from, you know, when the Optimizer series was, I guess, started, was it a single pin the whole way, or did you guys flirt, or did the company flirt with going multiple pins?
No, we've always dabbled in both. So the initial optimizer was a single pin. And it wasn't, we had a, I mean, probably right around that same time, the beginning, I can't remember the exact timeline. We did have a three pin that we called a triple threat. And it basically just the single pins. I mean, that was where the popularity was. So then rather, you know, obviously in the beginning we had limited resources, limited capital. So that was the direction they took, but that we've always dabbled in both. It's just every time HHA came out with a multiple pin, the single pins always sold more. So it was like, well, why, you know, let's just keep going that route. So now, I mean, we've had probably, I'm trying to think. So we had the original triple threat. We had a triple threat version 2. We had the FX. I mean, we've probably had 5 or 6 different versions of multiple pins over the years. I will say the version that we have now is probably our best that we've ever had as far as design and functionality goes. One of my favorites, I mean, this goes back to like probably 2005-ish, was our version 2 triple threat. That was one of my favorite multiple pin sites that was available at that time. But obviously, as you know, technology changes, you know, bowl designs change, you know, that can make some things obsolete. But it was just, even though we tried multiple pins, single pins was always where, you know, that was always where the majority of our business was. So that's, you know, that was kind of the route we took, and that was our focus until probably, you know, the last couple of years. We've as the company has grown, and we've trying to expand our market, you know, and our demographic, we've realized like, all right, we do have to, you know, we need to focus a little more on having a good multiple pin. And like I said, I think the one that we have this year is by far probably one of our better ones we've had. And it's, you know, we've been doing very well as far as sales go with it. So,
okay.
But still, I mean, we sell way more single pins.
Do you guys see trends? Like, okay, and I'll just use tree stands for an example. Right now, you know, saddle hunting is hot right now, right? You know, like everybody, everybody's talking about saddle hunting, you know.
Yeah.
Social media, you'll see people hunting in saddles, and there's this trend here. Well, there was a trend before social media for saddle hunting too, and it eventually kind of faded away, and people got back to tree stands and whatever. Do you see trends on people going from a single pin to multiple pins to back to single or vice versa?
Yep. Oh yeah. And probably, you know what, one of the biggest trends that's been so up and down, it's probably been one of the craziest like roller coasters I've seen. At least that comes to mind, other than like you said, the saddle hunting and just tree stands, but you know, that like adjustable or movable multiple pins, that is one of the craziest trends that I can think of, because adjustable or movable multiple pins have been around for, I mean, probably 20 plus years, but they really didn't become a thing until probably like 10 years ago. And all of a sudden you saw this spike in, you know, shooters wanting adjustable multiple pins. And that, you know, that fire lasted for maybe a year or two, and then it just fell off. And then nobody wanted adjustable multiple pins. Like you couldn't give them away. But then now all of a sudden, like we're starting to see a spike in that interest again. And it's just really, and I don't know what, you know, what fuels that, you know, those spikes and stuff, but we see that it's like every 2 years, you kind of see the cycle of, you know, they're either using straight 6 pins or they're using an adjustable single pin. And then 2 years later, now everybody wants an adjustable multiple pin. So it's a very interesting kind of curve.
Now, when you say adjustable multiple pins, does that mean every single pin has to be ranged in?
So when I say adjustable multiple pin, it means you have a multiple pin head on an adjustable frame. So it's like if you took a 4-pin head and put it like on our kingpin frame, it means that you have 4 fixed yardages, but then after your bottom pin, whatever that is, you compensate using the yardage wheel and then aim with a, you have an aiming pin then. So like they've been, systems like that have been around for a long time, whether you had 4 fixed and you used 1 pin that actually moved independently as a floater, or if you had 4 fixed that was on an adjustable frame. And when, you know, you would compensate for longer distances and then aim like with your bottom pin or your top pin or something like that.
I gotcha. So the floater pin is what I've known it as, where you have 3 set pins, right, that you have to actually go in and range or whatever. And then based off of how those pins are set, the wheel then controls the bottom pin, which is the floater. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Gotcha. So that's that. A lot of people like those terms kind of get used, like, you know, kind of intermixed, but like when somebody says a floater pin, that's what I think of, is that you really have one pin that adjusts independently from the rest of them. So we don't use a floater system. We have 4 fixed pins. So let's say, you know, you have 4 pins that are set 20, 30, 40, 50. So your bottom pin is 50 yards. And then past 50, you actually use your dial or your slide to make the adjustment to whatever the longer distance is. And then most people would aim with your bottom pin. So you do not have like an independently adjustable pin. They're all set for, you know, predetermined distances.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. So then, you know, the optimizer line comes out. It's been, you know, it did well. You guys made a round of adjustments on that. Talk to us a little bit from your knowledge of what goes into a new product, because I feel like today you can't get away anymore without, you know, with letting a product ride for, you know, 14 years or 10 years or whatever.
No.
I mean, you've got to come out with something new or your company's boring, right?
Yeah.
So what goes in when you guys are sitting around the round table having this discussion of what comes next, what goes into those conversations?
It's that whole scenario has changed so much over the last probably 5 or 6 years, mainly, you know, up until a year ago, Harry, the founder, was still very much involved with the company. So a lot of those conversations he was involved with, and he, you know, he had nothing but time, but to think and tinker. And so a lot of the ideas were generated from him, along with, you know, like the conversations we had at trade shows or, you know, customer feedback, whatever. So, but a lot of it is just feedback. You know, we're all users, but we obviously are very close to the product. So, you know, we know how to use them the way we use them. So, you know, obviously when you have masses, you know, using your product, everybody's going to kind of, you know, critique them and pick them apart. So, you know, a lot of like the design changes and stuff came from customer feedback. I think we do rely heavily on that to this day, but you know, it's like, how can we make things easier? Like, cause in our minds, you know, using like a single pin adjustable, it doesn't get any easier than that. Like it's a point and shoot system, like very simplistic, but again, we deal with it every day. So it's of course it's easy for us. Right. But a lot of it is, it's just looking at what we've done, you know, what are other companies doing? Like, what are some new trends that we're seeing in the industry? Is there, you know, new technology that we're currently not using that we could use? And, you know, we're, you know, being a smaller company, we're obviously limited what we can do, you know, whether it's because of capital or, what are our capabilities as far as like our machines and stuff like that? Cause we machine 100% everything in house. I shouldn't say 100%, 99.9% of everything we do, we make ourselves. So that kind of, you know, limits some things too, but you know, a lot of it is just, like I said, it's just, you know, we hear so much, you know, from our customers, our sales guys, and stuff like that. So, you know, that's where a lot of the, you know, kind of the brainstorming and the ideas come from. And then it's actually putting them into place and being, you know, nine times out of 10, a lot of the ideas we have don't work. You know, it's like, all right, like we'll actually put it on a site or try to make a prototype. And we're like, well, that sucked. That didn't, you know, that's not going to work, you know, or whatever. So, you know, it just kind of goes back to how like the company started. Like we just throw darts at a wall and, you know, eventually one of them is going to stick. Right. So, but the nice thing about having our own machines is we can, you know, if we come up with an idea, we can get to work on it right away. You know, we can get working on prototypes right away. So,
yeah, there's no, God, I forget who I was talking with, about that. And he's like, listen, I used to work for a manufacturing company that, you know, we would come up with a prototype. Then we would send the prototype to China. China would do their thing. Then they would send it back. And this is 6 months goes by. And it sounds like other companies similar to what you guys are doing, it's prototype, design, all that can happen as fast as the company really wants it to happen, right? I mean,
absolutely.
You build it, you test it, and if it's good enough, shit, you produce it.
Yep. No, and that's, I don't know if you want to call, I guess it could be a competitive advantage and a competitive disadvantage because our lead times are, I mean, that's based on us, right? Like if we want to knock something out in 2 weeks, we can knock something out in 2 weeks. If, as long as we can get the materials and, you know, whatever. But if we want to drag it out for 4 to 6 months, we can drag it out 4 or 6 months. So we do have the majority control. So it's not like if we have an idea, you know, we sit in a conference room with 20 people and everybody's arguing with each other because, you know, most people fall in love with their own idea and you're trying to convince everybody else to get on board with it. It's literally, you know, maybe five of us max. And we might jump on a conference call with a couple of our sales guys. We may have a couple of them, you know, drive up and meet with us. And, you know, we may send a couple prototypes out to people with non-disclosures. But for the most part, once we have an idea, we can get to work on it right away. There's nobody we need approval from, you know, it's ours. So, we can usually knock out stuff product wise pretty quickly. Now, I mean, some of our longer lead times are, you know, getting the packaging and all that stuff, which is out of our control. But, you know, as far as the actual, you know, building the product, we can usually do that. Pretty quick. And especially like a year like this, like, God, man, if you're outsourcing something from China this year, I feel awful for those companies. Cause I mean, there's so much crap that's sitting on the water right now. Like, I mean, competing companies that, you know, they're friends of ours, we're competitors, but you know, they outsource stuff overseas. And I mean, they're 4, 6 to 8 months from getting product, you know? So it's like, thank God for, you know, American made products.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And are all of your products American made that come out of HHA, even your rest?
Everything.
Okay, cool.
Like I said, 99% of the stuff we make, like on our rest, for example, the only thing we don't make are the containment arm and the launcher, which is a glass filled nylon. So that's all molded. We don't do that stuff. But everything's assembled, you know, in house. But anything on our sites or rest that are machined aluminum or just metal, we built it.
Okay. All right. So, now you have the next generation of, I guess I'm reading right off the website here, the next generation of optimizer sites is the Tetra. What is the difference between the optimizer line and the Tetra line?
So there's a big difference, but then there's not a big difference. So the Tetra was actually born back in 2017. That was part of our optimizer line. It was the optimizer Tetra, and that was born based off of the Kingpin, which is now known as the Tetra Max. So when we introduced the Kingpin back in 2014, I believe, and it was kind of above and beyond like anything that was really available. It was a very expensive site, but it was loaded with features. You know, it was one of the kind of like the first wheel forward designs, and you know, you had 100-yard capabilities and all this stuff, but it came with a higher price tag. And that was the biggest complaint we got, was that site was just too expensive. And, you know, we saw that with, you know, kind of the sales falling off the stuff. And so the idea said, well, you know, we should make a more economic version of the Kingpin. that's where the Tatra was born. But, you know, we had to find something to differentiate it. It couldn't just be a cheaper or a less expensive Kingpin. There had to be something like, all right, so for $100 less, what am I getting? You know, but it still had to be up to our standards. So long story short, the whole Tetra system as we know it now is all based off of the front end. So that's the biggest difference. Everything in our optimizer line, the scope housing bolted onto the frame. So you had two Allen wrench screws that would actually bolt the sight onto the frame, which worked fine. But when you came to sight in, you kind of always played this hopscotch game of trying to find the perfect set of holes for the scope housing to sit that would give you the most range out of your sight tape. And it just, it worked, but it just, it kind of extended the sight-in process longer than it really needed to. So now with the Tetra, the scope housing slides in an infinite adjust frame or slide. So you're no longer bolting the scope housing onto the frame. So it doesn't matter if it's our optimizer line or a Tetra line, they all get sighted in the same way. So you have to shoot 20 and 60 or 20 and 40, depending on what sight you have. So all of them, when you sight in at 20 yards with the optimizer line, that's where you're playing the hopscotch game of, okay, I want to try to get my 20 yard mark on my setup tape as close to zero as possible. But in order to do that, I have to adjust my scope housing up and down, right? So that's where you're unbolting it, bolting it, unbolting it, and bolting it. Where with the Tetra series, you're not unbolting anything. You're just sliding the scope housing up and down in the frame. So one, it makes it easier and quicker to sight in your 20-yard mark, but it also makes it more precise too. So you can literally dial your 20-yard mark like as precise as you want it to, as you want it to be, which pays dividends when you go back to sight in at 60, because then you're truly going to find the most accurate sight tape you can. So that's the big difference in the Tetra series is that kind of that independent, like unique front end.
Okay. So let's say there's a guy out there, he's brand new to hunting. What is the sight that you would recommend for a newbie? It's just ease of setup.
I mean, if they just, I mean, there's kind of, I guess it all depends on what are they going to be doing and what capabilities do they want to have? Like, so if it's a brand new shooter, never shot a bow before, max distance is probably going to be 30, 40 yards, like to the yard accuracy really isn't important. They literally just want to go shoot. I would still say our optimizer light, which is our original, you know, that's where everything started. The optimizer light, in my opinion, it's the most basic, functional, durable sight that's not going to break the bank, right? I mean, you can pick one up for $130 and it's going to do everything that any one of our other sights will do. It's just, you know, you don't have the precision of the yardage tapes. You don't have second and third axis. It lacks bells and whistles and features, but it's very functional. If they wanted to take a step up and they wanted a little more precision, wanted to get into a little bit, you know, maybe possibly do some longer range shooting. And just like I said, overall want more precision, then I would say just, you know, the straight Tetra but the Tetra probably, the standard Tetra is probably by far my favorite sight we make. I mean, it's a reasonable price. I mean, $250, but it's got everything you really need.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So there anything else that you want to cover with the sights before we jump into the rests?
I mean, the big thing is, you know, whether it's our optimizer line or a Tetra line, you know, everything's covered by our lifetime warranty. So anything happens to it, we're going to replace it. And whether it's the optimizer line, all of our sights are like kind of a plug and play system. So you pick the frame you want, and then you pick the scope housing size you want, and you pick the pin size you want. And the beauty of that is you can interchange the scope housings. So if you want a 10,000 pin for shooting 3D in the summer, and then you want a 19,000 for, you know, hunting, all you have to do, you just change the front ends out. And then with the Tetra series, you have the option of going from single pin to multiple pin. So that's kind of unique to, you know, HHA is the fact that you can do all that customization, and, you know, the fact that you know, that there's a lot of great sites out there. And, you know, again, like some of our biggest competitors we're friends with, but we're also competitors. And we use a lot of the same materials as a lot of the other site companies. But the fact that we do all of our own in-house machining is huge, because our quality control is very, very extensive. And in my opinion, we hold some of the tightest tolerances, you know, available in sites. You know, you really can't go wrong with any of them. But the big thing is, it doesn't matter whether it's a $130 site or a $400 site, it's covered by warranty. And if anybody ever had any issues with it, I mean, obviously we're going to take care of them.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Let's see. And by the way, that's one thing I don't hear out of a lot of companies is, hey man, we have really good tolerances because of our, you know, our quality control. Like, that, and I come from somewhat of a manufacturing background, that is huge. Like, QA in any form of manufacturing is probably, if not equal to the manufacturing process itself, because you got to catch the mistakes and the one-offs before you ship it to a person. Because typically what happens is the person who gets the bad product yells the loudest. And they're all over social media talking crap on the company and all that stuff these days. So,
wow. And that's exactly right. And, you know, a lot of it stemmed from, because a lot of our quality control came from, you know, Harry when he was still around. Nothing got packaged until he put his hands on it. And he was super picky. I mean, super picky. So, you know, obviously, you know, with him gone, you know, we did not lose any of our quality control, because we all learned like what his standard was. He set the bar. That doesn't mean, I mean, there's still human error involved. So it doesn't mean that one or two of them, you know, may not be, you know, up to our standards that squeaks out. But if one of those does leak out, we're going to get it back and we're going to replace it. So, because, I mean, like you said, with this day and age with social media, you know, it's so easy for people to jump on there and criticize. And, you know, I just bought, you know, this HHA for $300, the biggest piece of shit, like, yeah, whatever. Like, no, it's not. You may have just, you know, okay, maybe one squeaked out, but just get a hold of us. We'll take care of it. You know, and that's one thing we really, other than the quality of our products, the quality of our customer service is probably one of the most important parts of our business. You know, like I said, whether it's sights, rest, arrows, whatever, I mean, it's pretty a level playing field these days. Like, there's not really anybody using any material that nobody else is using. So from quality products, you may get some fluctuation and stuff, but the one thing we can control and we can strive to always do better is our customer service. And that is, like I said, is one of the most important parts of our business, is providing quality customer service, whether it's, you know, if we have to sit on the phone for 25 minutes while somebody's at the range trying to set in their site, we will. Whether it's, you know, troubleshooting, you know, a problem that somebody that's having, whatever. Like, we, taking care of our customers is number, you know, number one priority. So,
yeah. All right. So let's get into this rest once, you know, just from looking at it, it looks like it's a drop away rest. Mm-hmm. When was this rest introduced to HHA?
So the Virtus was introduced, I believe that was 2017 as well, because I think we introduced that the same year as the Tetra. So backing up to, you know, like the early 80s and stuff, we've had probably three or four different versions of arrow rest, and any, you know, from the basic two prong,
yeah,
you know, spring loaded launcher, you know, rest, up until we had a couple different fall away versions. And then we kind of got away from it, just, you know, because like I said, over time, just the sites are what took off. And so when I officially joined the company, that was one of the first questions they asked me was, you know, if you could get into market, what would you get into? And at the time, I was currently a buyer for a big archery distributor. And, you know, so I had kind of an inside look as to what the rest market you know, was doing currently doing. And I said, I come out with a follow-away arrow rest. I said, there's room for one, you know, there's one company that's kind of excelling, but there's not really anybody else that's, you know, kind of pushing them at all. And so that's kind of where the conversation stemmed from. And it was a point in time where I don't want to say the site market was stale, but we needed to throw a little extra gas on the fire just to try to ignite some, you know, some different revenue streams and whatever. So, you know, kind of goes back to the round table idea. We're like, hell, let's give it a try. And it was one of the best things we've ever done, but it was also one of the most challenging things, which you would think, like, coming from making these pretty, you know, detailed, extensive sites, like coming up with a rest wouldn't be that hard, but it was actually, it was one of the more challenging projects we've done.
And was that because it was a brand new SKU for you guys?
Well, brand new. I mean, it wasn't brand new. 'Cause like I said, we had done followaways in the past, but you know, when you get into a new market, you got to do your research, right? So you got to look at what's already currently available, what patents are involved, what's, you know, all this stuff. And then how do we differentiate it? Right. But how do we differentiate it without, while still keeping the integrity of the functionality, but then also keeping it up to our standards without it costing too much more than what everybody else was selling. And, it was about a 2-year learning curve just with like the design. And, we had a great design. It's just, there's a lot we didn't realize about, you know, follow arrests and, you know, there's some violent reactions that go on inside and, you know, you got to make sure the parts you're using are durable enough to handle that. But so it was kind of a crazy, crazy ride. But, you know, the Virtus that is available today is, I mean, it's one of the better quality products.
Yeah.
We built as far as, you know, the functionality, and yet it's still, you know, a petite, small, simple frame, you know, so it's not, it's a product that we're pretty proud of. And then, you know, kind of the message that goes along with the rest as well.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of moving parts in a drop away rest. And I'll be honest, I'll just say this. I used the Ripcord for years and years and years. And I think in this X number of years that I've used the Ripcord, I've had two on my bow, and one lasted me for like 7 years. I mean, I beat the piss out of it, and it functioned the same way every single time. And to me, that means a lot for an end user. What kind of testing went into this, the Virtus that said, now we can give it to people, now we can sell it, now we can put the HHA sticker on it because we know it's going to perform the same way every single time?
More than any product we've ever done. We did more testing on that product than any product we've ever done, because we knew we were a new kid, you know, entering a new block. We basically had one chance at this. And if we miss this, we were going to look like fools, and basically we could never enter the rest market ever again. So we knew like the stakes were pretty high. There was a lot of risk, but the reward was worth the risk. So, I mean, we did everything from, you know, high speed camera testing. We did, durability testing. We fired thousands and thousands and thousands of shots through them. I took one of the first prototypes with me on a 30-day excursion in Alaska, which, I mean, you know, getting drugged through sand and mud. And yeah. That was a prototype. That was one of the first prototypes. And I shot that rest for almost 2 years, which, it's crazy that it lasted that long, because I'll admit, like, the first vertices that we made, even though all the testing we put them through, you still there's the opportunity to miss something. And we did. And basically what we missed was we relied on the fact that everybody would set up the rust the way we did. And it's not that you set a Virtus rust up any differently than any other rust. It's just there's certain little details that make it function better than if you didn't do those certain details. But then what we found out was if you didn't do it the way we did it, the rust could fail. And if the rust failed, it was shot. It was junk. So we went back, we ripped everything apart. We're like, all right, this is no bueno. And luckily at that time we had only shipped out like a very select few, you know, just to kind of like some of the first dealers that placed orders that, you know, we were still kind of in like the beta testing phase. Like it passed at every, you know, all of our parameters, but you know, until you get it out to the masses, you never know how it's going to perform. Right. So right away we started getting feedback. We're like, all right, like halt production, halt shipping, get all the ones we shipped back. We got to fix this. So basically what was happening was there was a pin inside. And that's the one thing about our rust is that there is very, very minimal moving parts inside. But because of that, a lot of, you know, those parts that, or the material you use for those parts, they have to function, right? Because if one thing goes wrong, the rest is shot. You're out of commission. So we had this one pin that if the rest wasn't set up correctly, and I didn't want to say correctly, but like if it wasn't set up the way we set it up and the arrow hit the launcher, it would force this cock past this pin and it would shear that pin off. Well, then the rest would just sit there and you could flip it. It wouldn't pick up. It wouldn't do anything. So we replaced that pin. We beefed that up. We, you know, at the time we were taking out more material than we needed to. So we quit doing that. And it kind of worked out because we could do all these, like we're getting all this feedback at the same time. So we could make multiple changes at one time. So then we had version 2 and we launched those. Right. And you know, the select few we sent out, everything was going great. But then, you know, again, we got a feedback where if the rest didn't fall and the arrow hit the launcher, so the pin that we thought we fixed, we actually made it worse because although we beefed that pin up, we made it out of stainless steel, which stainless steel won't wear, but it's brittle. It'll break, right? So same thing. We were like shearing these pins off and we're like, damn it. Like, all right, enough is enough. Like, you know, it was a little bit more expensive, but so we changed the material of that. We beefed it up even more. And then now we're on version 3. So literally in probably like, I want to say like 6 weeks, we had like version 1, 2, and 3 knocked out. So we've been running version 3 since then. And it's been, you know, it's been great. So we finally found the winning formula. I mean, the one thing I will say, and like all the testing we did, whether it's, you know, a ripcord, you know, whatever else, a rest, I mean, because a rest is, it's getting used and abused nonstop, right? Like if you're shooting hundreds of arrows, you're hunting, whatever, a rest will fail at some time. Like it's just, you know, the integrity of the parts are eventually, it will fail. It probably be 10 years from when you bought it, but it will fail at some time. So knowing that and going through all of our testing, we're like, let's, you know, we don't want ours to fail. And if it is going to fail, it's like, it's on, you know, junior who is fourth generation is using it or something like that. So we were very, very critical when we were coming out with version 3, cause we're like we got to get this right, you know, whatever. So, and like I said, luckily the learning curve was pretty quick, but it just, you know, it was one of those things where just like, you know, you're just beating your head against the wall. And, but you know, like I said, the Virtus that we have today is, I mean, I can honestly say, like, obviously I'm, you know, I work for the company, but even if I didn't, I would 100% shoot our rust. It's in my opinion, it's one of the best rusts on the market as far as functionality and durability.
Awesome. All right. So a guy is going into the store and he's looking for a sight or he's looking for a rest, and he comes to this wall full of sights and rests and, you know, accessories for the bow and whatnot, why should that guy, whether he is brand new or veteran to archery, choose an HHA sighter rest?
I think the big thing is, you know, like I said before, there's so many good products available. I mean, so many good products. I mean, you know that, I know that. Like, we both have shot how many different sights, how many different rests. Like, there's a lot of good products, but I think really, like, my biggest selling point is that it just comes down to, like, I mean, obviously, because we make everything, the quality is there, the tolerances are there, and just the fact that our customer service is, I mean, that's, you're going to be taken care of, right? Like, you know, whether it's you're only with us for a year or, you know, and then you go and try something else, it doesn't, you know, that doesn't matter. Like, that's fine, you know, but if you are going to use one of our products, like, I mean, you're almost kind of like part of our family. Like, we're going to take care of you if something happens. So, I mean, that's my biggest selling point. Like I said, I can talk all day about, you know, we use this aluminum, we use this, you know, we have this feature, we have this or that, and that's all fine and dandy. But I, in my opinion, it's just the fact that, like, if you ever do run into an issue, like I said, you're either going to talk to me or two other people, but you're going to talk to one of us and we're going to get you taken care of.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds good, man. Well, I tell you, thanks for taking time to hop on the podcast and chit chat with us today. If people want to find out more about HHA and their lineup of sights and rests, where should we send them?
Best place, I mean, for the most information would just be our website, which is hhasports.com. You know, jump on Instagram and Facebook and, you know, you can connect with us there. Or, I mean, if, you know, like I said, if you have questions on anything, just pick up the phone and call us, and, you know, we're more than happy to answer any questions anybody has.
Sounds good, man. Well, hey, Scott, thanks for coming on today, and good luck the rest of the season.
Yeah, you too, man. Thank you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.